and exited the Z2 lattice gauge theory in D equal 2 plus 1 dimensions. So these are the special dimensions, and plus 1 means that it's a quantum theory. So we have a square lattice with the periodic boundary conditions, so it's on a torus. And we have placed spins 1/2 on the edges, on the links of this lattice, so that our total Hilbert space is just the tensor product of all these local spin 1/2 tensor Hilbert spaces, that is C2, and therefore this is C2 tensored many times. So if our lattice is L times L, we have 2L square links. So we have 2L square spins 1/2. So this is our total Hilbert space. And we have seen that our prescription to obtain the physical Hilbert space of the gauge theory is to define local gauge transformations, AS. So they are based at some vertex that is labeled by S. And we have chosen this operator. So we apply sigma x on all the links that come out of S. So this is our local gauge transformation. It acts on these four spins. And we have defined the physical Hilbert space, like the set of states in the total Hilbert space that obey this gauge constraint, so such that AS psi is identically equal to psi. So we have decided that the physical states are labeled in many different ways by different gauge transformations, so we identify them. Okay, so in this sense, this is not a symmetry, but it's just a gauge structure. And we have seen that the Hamiltonian for this gauge theory is defined by defining these local plaquette operators that are the sum over all the links that belong to a plaquette. And we act with sigma z on them. So in our gauge theory, we sum over all the possible plaquette operators. And then we also sum over some transverse field that acts on every spin. And of course, both these terms always commute with our gauge transformations. So our Hamiltonian is invariant under the gauge transformations, which is a requirement for the gauge theory. So this means that if we act with our Hamiltonian on our physical Hilbert space, then we stay inside that physical Hilbert space. Okay, so. And okay, so we must understand what are the relevant degrees of freedom in this theory. Because, so it's not the spins, right? If I take some spin configuration and I use it as a basis state, the spin configuration is likely not to be in the physical Hilbert space. Actually, for sure, it will not be in the physical Hilbert space because one given spin configuration is not invariant under AS, because AS flips some spins, right? So it changes the spin configuration. So we must understand what are the good degrees of freedom. So they must be gauge invariant quantity. So the degrees of freedom must be some gauge invariant quantities. And we would like to use the BP, because the BP are gauge invariant. And how many degrees of freedom we need? Well, we need to know what is the dimension of the physical Hilbert space. And we saw that this is equal to 2 to the L square plus 1. So we have how many different BPs we have? We have L square of them, but they are not all independent. In fact, you can easily check that when you have periodic boundary conditions, the product of all the BPs is the identity. So this means that if you select L square minus 1 of these quantum numbers, which is the eigenvalue of the operator BP, then the last one is also determined by this constraint, right? Because the product of all of them must be 1. So in fact, remember that BP has 2 eigenvalues. So we saw that last time, it's like a spin. It has only eigenvalues plus 1 and minus 1 with certain multiplicity, but these are the 2 different eigenvalues, because it's just a product of sigma z operators. And so we would like to label our states in this basis. So we have BP on the first plaquette, BP on the second plaquette, and so on, up to BP on the plaquette that is the L square minus 1, because then the last one is redundant because it's determined. So this is a basis state. And each of these objects can have 2 values, plus and minus 1. So this is a good basis for a 2 to the L square minus 1 dimensional subspace inside H physical. So we didn't find yet a complete basis for the whole system. Okay, so if you select all plus ones, you have some basis state in this subspace, then you can start flipping some of these plaquettes. And of course, there are these many ways of obtaining different basis states. This is just like a spin system, only new variables that are called BP. Okay. Well, okay, but we need to find the basis for the whole Hilbert space, right? So there are 2 basis states missing, because we need L squared plus 1 basis states in this Hilbert space. So where are they? So we need to find some operator that still acts in the physical Hilbert space. So we must find some operator W that commutes with all the AES, but it is independent of all the plaquette operators, because otherwise, if it is just some combination of the BPs, we don't have an independent degree of freedom. So it must fulfill this. But we have seen that, so it must be a gauge invariant operator. But we have seen that the only gauge invariant operators must be some kind of loops. Okay? So, of course, any operator that contains sigma x is also a good gauge invariant operator. But this doesn't help us very much, because we are working in this in the basis of the BPs. So if we use some operators that contain sigma x, this would not commute with this. And so we don't know if they are independent or not. So we would still like to find something that commutes with this. So it must contain sigma z and must be some kind of loop. Yep. Yeah, OK. So this is necessary in order to be a good quantum number. Because if it's a good quantum number, must label states inside here. and therefore must commute with the gauge transformations. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a quantum number for that subspace. Now I'm just arguing that this new quantum number, we must be sure that it is independent from all this. So we would like some operator that commutes with them. And so this argument can be made rigorous. So you can prove that pretty much you need some other operator that is some loop made of loop of sigma z operators. Okay? On the other hand, we have seen that every time we've seen when we showed what are the gauge invariant correlation functions at high temperature, that every time we draw a loop on our lattice, this can be decomposed like the product of Plaquette operators. In fact, if you do this product, all the interior cancels and you get the loop. So means there is nothing else to do, or? Yeah, very good. So we have seen that this is true for every contractible loop. If you take a loop that goes around the torus, like this one, so this is a loop that gets all these spins and goes around the torus, this cannot be decomposed like a product of Plaquettes. But being a loop of sigma z operators, it still commutes with all this. So this loop is good. So W1 is a loop around the, let's say, y direction of the torus. So we have our torus, and here is our lattice. So this loop here works. Well, but of course also this one. So we have two. So W2 is another loop around the x direction of the torus. So these are the two missing degrees of freedom. So they are topological in nature. So that our gauge invariant Hilbert space, HFIS, is the tensor product of all these HP, and P goes from 1 to L squared minus 1. So HP is the Hilbert space spanned by BP equal plus 1. BP equals minus 1. Tensored the Hilbert space H1 and the Hilbert space H2. So H1 comma 2 is the one that is spanned by W1 comma 2 being plus 1 or minus 1. And at this point it should be easy to see that. So also this W1 and W2 correspond to a spin 1/2 degree of freedom, because being just the product of sigma z operators around the loop, they still have only two different eigenvalues, plus 1 and minus 1. So formally, W1 comma 2 is the product over all the spins that go around the loop gamma 1 or gamma 2. So the spins in AS twice, and therefore the commutation relations follow.
Questions? Okay. So here there are two remarks that we have to make. So the first is, okay, so why did you choose this particular line and this particular line and not some other line that wraps around the torus? You know, I could have shifted it, or I could have made another line that is not straight, but still wraps around the torus. Also, this one would commute with all our gauge transformations and would be independent on the big piece. So you have to notice this, that the AS operators, our gauge transformations, can change the shape of a loop. Okay? So imagine that they're both contractible or not contractible. Imagine I draw a loop here, and then I apply AS here. So this would create, actually, let me do it with the big piece. So imagine I have a loop operator, and then I act with a plaquette operator. So this is a loop operator made of Z. This is also made of Z. Where they overlap, we get the identity, and we get a new loop operator that has a different shape. So by applying the big piece in all the possible ways, we can change the shape of a loop in every possible way. In particular, we can either translate a non-contractible loop on the torus, just multiplying with all, by all these plaquette operators, and then we can change its shape in every way we want. So this means that we pick one, and it's independent, but all the others are obtained by already using the operator big piece, so we don't get any new one. So this is all. So this is the first remark. The second remark is that you may say, oh, but the Hilbert space of this theory looks very funny because contains two, so it cannot be written like the tensor product of local degrees of freedom. It's the tensor product of some local degrees of freedom and some non-local degrees of freedom. And it's good that you feel not at ease with this. So it is true that the gauge theory seems a quite unnatural theory. So one, it is a good question to ask, but how would nature do such a thing? So this is one question that we'll answer. Okay. The last property that I want to show you for the gauge theory is the degeneracy of the ground space. Okay, so let's do it for H equals Z. So now let's take the pure gauge theory, means that H is equal to zero. And let's compute the degeneracy. Okay, so our Hamiltonian is just this term. And all these operators commute with each other. VP and VP prime always commute with each other. Okay? Well, and you see that when Vp is equal plus 1, we get an energy minus j for that part of the Hamiltonian. And when Vp is equal minus 1, we get an energy plus j. So the ground state is obtained by minimizing all these operators independently. So the system is not frustrated. You can easily find the ground state by minimizing all these operators. So the ground state is such that the value of Vp is plus 1 for every p. Or if you want, let me write it like this. This is the set of states in our physical Hilbert space, such that Vp on psi is equal to psi. This doesn't, right? It's an eigenvector of eigenvalue plus one. Well, now you see that. So our state in our basis is all the Vps, Vp1 is equal to plus 1, Vp L squared minus 1 is equal to plus 1. Well, and then we are left with two other quantum numbers, W1 and W2, that can get the values plus 1, minus 1, plus 1, minus 1. So there are four states that have the same energy. Right? Changing this quantum number doesn't change the energy, because W1 and W2 commute with the Hamiltonian. So we have that this is the dimension of L is equal to 4. So, by the way, so let me, because we will use it. So I said that this W1 and W2 are quantum numbers that are like a spin 1/2. So we would like to understand on this spin 1/2, what are the two operators that realize the Pauli algebra. So, well, one is W1, right? Because W1 is by definition the one that has eigenvalue plus 1 and minus 1. So this means the W1 on W1 equal 1 is 1 times W1 equal 1. And W2 on W, so W1 on W1 equal minus 1 is minus W1 equal minus 1. So this plays the role of the Z, sigma Z operator. So we need to understand what is the operator that changes this quantum number, that anti-commutes with sigma Z. So the ones that plays the role of X. So remember that X on plus 1 gives you minus 1, and on minus 1 gives you plus 1. So it's the spin flip operator. So what is this one? Well, it is also a topological operator. So if this was our W1, now draw another non-contractible loop on the dual lattice. And act with the sigma x on all the spins that are met in this way. So you see that this loop and this loop only meet in one spin, and they meet with sigma x and sigma z. So the computational relations that they realize are those of a spin 1/2. So from now on, this W1 will have W1z to remember what is its role, and this will be W1x. So you can see that W1x, W1z, anti-commute, and moreover, they both square to the identity. And similarly for the W2. So they really make a spin 1/2. This is a spin 1/2. So we know that to change this quantum number, we must use also a non-local operator. We cannot change this global quantum number by means of a local operator.
Yeah. But where do you get this in the way you want x from? You just put it there? Where was it before you?
I don't understand the question. What is the question? Where was it?
I mean, it's an operator that acts in the dual lattice. Why do we have to...
geometrically I draw it from the dual lattice, but it's acting on this spin, this spin, this spin, this spin, this spin, this spin. These are spins in our lattice, right?
But isn't it like a Gibbs transformation?
Huh?
Isn't it like a big transformation? No, it's not through the whole period.
So this is an operator that commutes with our transformation. So it keeps us in our inverse space. So I have defined it like everything else at the beginning in terms of the original degrees of freedom. And I've just shown you that on the new degrees of freedom, so on the W1Z, it acts like the spin flip operator. So in fact, if because this subspace exists, there must be an operator that, you know, goes from one basis element to another basis element. I could have defined it in that way, but then you would not have known what it looked like in terms of the original degrees of freedom. And I just showed you that it looks like the product of spins around some loop. Only think of it as the product of spins around some loop. You have to draw the loop on the dual lattice. So we see that the degeneracy is 4. Now imagine that we had another type of Riemann surface, so a surface with two holes instead of one. So the number of holes on a closed surface is called genus, so this is g equal 2. The torus has g equal 1, the sphere has g equal 0, and so on and so forth. Well, now you see that I can get, so around this hole, I can get two pairs of anti-commuting loops. So just so this is one pair, the other pair is the one given by W2. W2 is where I start with sigma z in this way and sigma x in this way. W1 is the other way around. So this makes a spin 1 half. But then I can I get another copy of this algebra here. So this makes another spin 1 half. So you see that I have two spins 1 half for every hole. So this means that if I reproduce this construction on a Riemann surface with a higher genus, the dimensionality of my ground space will be 2 to the 2 g. So when g is equal to 1, it's 2 to the 2, right? Because so 2 means we have a spin 1 half. But so for every g, we have 2 spins 1 half, right? Because we have 2 ways. So the first spin is, let me see that x is the purple one. So on the first, on every hole, you can do these two things. So this gives you a spin 1 half, this gives you another spin 1 half. So you have 2 to the 2. And you can do it for every hole, so you have 2 to the 2 g. Yep.
What about if we link the two holes together, if we tie them? Is it something different?
If you do something like this.
No, if we take like if we had a torus with two holes and we put a string between the holes and.
So a string here,
yeah.
Well, it's just contractible. Oh, but you mean a string like this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this can be decomposed with the others. It's not an independent topology.
But how can it get inside the hole is not in your Hilbert space? I mean, it's not in your lab.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. So a string like this, that's right. It's a string that you can draw, but it's not running on the surface of the lattice. So you must remember that these strings are a way to collect these spins. The spins live on the surface of the lattice. So if you just draw something that does not touch the surface of the lattice at all, you don't get anything. Okay, so this is the degeneracy. This is very important. Okay. So we are ready to finally give a definition of what we mean by topological quantum order. Topological one, two more. Yeah.
More question?
Question.
Could you elaborate on how that's not on the surface? I don't quite understand.
Okay. So what part?
Why is that loop joining the two holes not on the surface of the ladder?
So, well, yeah. So it really depends how you draw it. So if you draw it by gluing it to the surface of the lattice, then it would be decomposable in the orders. But if you don't, then it does not, right? Because it doesn't touch the spits. Okay. So we're about to give the definition of topological quantum order. So the first thing we need, something that we have to work on a little, because we need some local model. And you remember our definition of a local model. We want a Hilbert space, the tensor product of many different Hilbert spaces. Well, and so far, well, that is a tensor product. But each of these should be a local Hilbert space. So here is the problematic thing, right? So why we make this requirement is not just a formal requirement, it's that we would really like to see how we can make a gauge theory appear. So imagine that you have some local degrees of freedom and you can engineer any type of Hamiltonian in your lab, as long as you do not have interactions with too many bodies, right? So how would you do that? How would you engineer a material that has some of these properties? Okay, so the trick is the following. We can make the gauge theory emerge with a simple trick. Okay. So we work in the total Hilbert space. So it's just the Hilbert spaces of all the spins. And then we put as our Hamiltonian minus u, the sum over my wannabe gauge transformations, minus j, the sum over my dp's, and then there is the external field. And so we choose always u and j greater than 0. Now let's first look at the ground state. Well, because the AS and the BP, again, for the simple case of h equals 0, we discussed the cases h different from 0 later. Well, again, you can find the ground state by setting also these eigenvalues to plus 1, because these operators all commute, so the common ground state is the one where all the AS are plus 1 and all the BP are plus 1. Well, so this L prime is the set of all the states in the total total Hilbert space such that AS psi is equal to psi and BP psi is equal to psi. Hold on, but this means that, so our ground state is also a gauge invariant state, right? Because it respects all these conditions. If I act with my AS on my ground state, it will not change. And then it has this property, that is exactly this property. So this means that L prime is equal to L. So we've just shown that the ground space of the lattice Z2 gauge theory and the ground space of this model that is on the total Hilbert space are identical. Moreover, we can do more than that. Imagine that you, okay, so we have just shown that L and L prime are the same thing. Moreover, if U is much larger than J, how does our spectrum look like? Okay, so we have our four degenerate Gram states for the case of sampled one. Well, then we have a gap that is obtained by starting to change the eigenvalues of the BP operator. So you see that when I flip one of the BPs to minus one, my energy becomes, I gain an energy with respect to the Gram state, it is plus 2j. Right? Because my Gram state energy is minus L squared j. But when I flip one BP, it becomes minus L squared minus 1j plus j, which is equal, so this is in 0, this is E0 plus 2j. So the gap is 2j. And then I have many states here because I can do, it's very degenerate because I can choose what bracket I flip, right? So I have a degeneracy that is like L squared. Well, then I can keep flipping plaquettes, and I flip many other states. Well, then I can start flipping the AS operators. So instead of having eigenvalue plus one, they can have eigenvalue minus one. So here we have another big gap, which is very large, that is of the order u. And we have the rest of the states. So these states up here, I just said they are obtained by flipping the value of AS. Whereas these states here have all the AS equal plus 1. So all the AS is equal plus 1 for every S, which means that AS psi is equal to psi. It's eigenstates of eigenvalue plus 1. So we see that the low energy theory is the gauge theory. So we have found a way to make the gauge theory appear in the low energy theory of some spin system whose Hamiltonian is just the sum of these commuting local operators. And what are the properties that we have? Okay, one, this is a local model, finally. Then we have a gap. Then we have a degenerate Gram state. So far, also the models have these properties, like the Ising model. Now the interesting stuff. Four. We do not have a local order parameter.
Question?
Yep.
Since we included AS, does it Hamiltonian, and why is the Gram state degenerate?
Since we?
Included AS in Hamiltonian?
Yeah.
Are the AS includes the non-contractable loops?
No. No, the AS does not include non-contractable loops. So we do not have the local order parameter. The fifth, which I should call 3B property, is that this degeneracy, so let me call it big delta, this degeneracy, delta depends on topology. In fact, delta is equal to the 2G for this type of moments. So this is very new. Models with local order parameters have a degeneracy that depends on the fact that different degenerate ground states are distinguished by the different value of the local order parameter. For instance, when you break the Z2 symmetry in the SI model, you have two degenerate states, one with local magnetization plus one, and the other one with local magnetization minus one. So it's the symmetry breaking that gives you a degeneracy. This is a completely different mechanism to create a degenerate ground state. It's naturally topological. And in fact, the degeneracy depends explicitly on the topology of the system. Another property is what happens when H is different from Z. I will argue in a minute that this degeneracy is robust. It's not only robust if you put that particular term. Every perturbation, and now, you know, now we are not, we are in the total hyperspace, so we do not need to put exactly that gauge invariant term. Every perturbation, a perturbation that can break any type of symmetry, your local transformation, all you want, will not change the degeneracy. So this is very strange. You know from perturbation theory that the only way that when you apply perturbation, you don't split the degeneracy because your perturbation has some symmetry, has some of the same symmetries of the Hamiltonian. A random perturbation, for instance, doesn't have any symmetry and would split the ground state. However, I'll show you in a minute that the splitting, so let me call it this splitting delta, between two ground states, when I introduce any perturbation, goes like e to the minus l. So for a large system, so in the thermodynamic limit is zero, but also this thermodynamic limit is reached extremely fast. So the splitting is only a finite size effect. And actually the finite size is lost very quickly. Already if we make a system with a linear set of 10, it's basically impossible to split this degeneracy. And this is a very remarkable property. So this is pretty much the property for which topologically ordered materials are extremely interesting for applications, as I will explain in a minute.
Okay, that's a question.
Huh?
But for example, if we have another a continuous, if we wanted to modelize a continuous gauge theory with a low being a low energy, is it possible? Because this gauge theory, because it was discrete, it had the gap. But if, I mean, for example, a U1 gauge theory or something like this, can you modelize it as a low energy model of another thing?
Yes. Yes. So it is possible, and I will do that. I will show you how you can have an emergent U1 gauge theory. As far as topological quantum order is concerned, though, we want to have a gap. Okay? So, in this moment, it's part of the definition. It's an open problem if we can have a topological order material in the gapless case. So it's actually a question that is part of current research. So, you know, a definition is a definition, right? So you could cut the question this way, it's a definition. But I'm trying to convince you that the important property is that we have a degenerate ground space that does that depends only on the topology, and that the splitting is zero for the large system. Also for the mesoscopic systems. So I can show you why this would happen in presence of a gap when you have this order. So the logic is that if you have a gap and this absence of local order parameter, then you can measure this. Then there is the very interesting question, is it possible to have this happen even when there is not a gap? And this is a very good question. And the answer is, yes, it's possible, but there is not a complete theory that describes this. There are some examples that I'll show you. Okay. So let me speculate a little bit more formally what it means that you do not have a local order parameter. So we have seen that if you had a local order parameter, so you have some observable O, then you could take your first, say, the degenerate ground state. So let me pick two states in this degenerate ground space. So you pick your local order parameter, and this would be different in the second state. So one, no, not only, there would be, if this is true, then there would be other two states, phi 1 and phi 2, in the same subspace, in the same ground space, such that phi 1 or phi 2 is different from 0. So what did I do is the following. I took two basis states, I picked the basis in my ground space. And I'm saying, oh, imagine that I can distinguish them with a local operator. Then I can also find another basis such that this local operator, instead, what it does is to connect one to the other. So if this cannot happen for every pair of basis states in my Hilbert space and for every local operator, this would imply, or actually would be equivalent, to the fact that if A is the support of my local operator, rho A, that corresponds to the state 1, and rho A, that corresponds to the state 2, are identical. So said in another way, we can rephrase our condition about local order parameters by saying this. No matter which two states you pick in the ground state, they are locally indistinguishable. They are orthogonal states because they are different basis states. So globally, they are very distinguishable. So orthogonality is the most distinguishable thing that you can have in a Hilbert space. But locally, so when you look at them at the reduced density matrix, they have exactly the same density matrix. And this does not depend on how you move in the Hilbert space. It's true for every pair. Because you can easily construct, so for instance, the state all spins up plus all spins down. This one state is locally indistinguishable from all spins up minus all spins down. Just try to compute the reduced density matrix. But what is the Hilbert space that they span? They span the Hilbert space that is the same than all spins up and all spins down separately. And in that space, you can find easily, you know, your local order parameter that distinguishes them. Or if you want, in this original one, so all up plus all down and all up minus all down, your order parameter, instead of distinguishing them, your order parameter is the magnetization on one side, connects them. So if you put sigma z in here, you actually get one.
Which
is this condition.
Why does rho a equal rho 2 a follow?
So I have to, what I've shown you is that, so if this is equal for every OA, then they must be undistinguishable, right? Because the trace,
why should they be equal? What
so
is the contribution?
Let me give you the proof.
No, what is the contribution is if they are distinguishable by a local operator?
Well, if they are distinguishable by local operators, then the two reduced density matrices cannot be the same.
From the beginning.
Because you have the arrow, like it should be with the equal, right?
So I was discussing. Typically, when you have symmetry breaking, you have this situation. Okay. When you do not have symmetry breaking, you have in fact this situation that no local operator can connect two different states, and that no local operator can distinguish two different states. And in fact, these two things are the same thing if you pick any two states in the ground space. These are not really two different conditions. I was just showing you that these conditions are equivalent if you're able to pick any basis you want. And this thing implies, actually, it's equivalent to the fact that rho 1a is equal to rho 2a.
So we just put this as the definition that,
yes,
that
this
is not distinguishable by a local operator.
Yeah. So a topological quantum order, by definition, means you have a gap. You have a degenerate ground space whose degeneracy depends on the topology. And the different degenerate ground states cannot be locally distinguished. So these are the three. Let me write it. Gap. Degenerate GS depending on topology, namely it is 2d2g for this class of models, of course, or in general for other models can be some number q to the g.
And in some other, is this G changed by the Euler number? If you have.
Yeah, the Euler number is something more complicated. The G is the G's.
Yeah, but if you
have. Well, then you know that 1 to 2, 1 minus G is equal to the Euler number.
Yeah, but if you have handles, for example.
The handle is a hole.
But you cannot have a latitude handle.
It is a hole.
The handle is a hole.
Yeah,
so it wouldn't be
square
lengths.
The Euler number is characterized by two topological characteristics, right?
Right. Okay. So the point is that here we are in our, so when you have some lattice, okay, and now it can be regular because to do a more general construction, you cannot use a squared lattice. Okay, so you can still have star operator and plaquettes operators. If you set these two numbers, so the number of the star operators equal to the number of the plaquette operators, so you can always do this construction, and then the only The only thing that is left, the Euler characteristics equation has this. So G and chi are the same. Okay, so the general ground space, who's the general? The generality depends on the topology, and the different ground space states, so the ones that are orthogonal. So for instance, phi one, phi two, so we have many, right? We have two to the 2G of them. But so they are orthogonal. But the reduced density matrix to some local region is identical. So I have to prove this thing, that in our model this is what is happening. But you can see it's somehow a consequence of the absence of a local order parameter, because if this wouldn't be true, then I would have a local order parameter. But I will give you a direct proof of this. So, but what is, so let's also be precise about what is this A. What for A does it mean to be local? Well, it means that it is unable to see the topology. So any patch, even a big patch, on our torus, as long as it's contractible, would do the job. But this is still true. And I can, well, tomorrow I'll give you a proof of the local distribution. So let me just very briefly discuss one of the applications of this. So one of the reasons why topological order was so important is, well, first of all, because there were you couldn't explain it with the normal theory with local order parameters. So that raises one's curiosity. And originally, people have found materials that had this property, so namely a degenerate ground space where the degeneracy depends on the topology and absence of local order parameter in some materials called fractional quantum orbitals. When people realized this property here, that is a consequence of these things, as I will show, they realized something very interesting. So imagine now that I make a superposition with arbitrary coefficients of my basis states phi 1 and phi 2. Well, this is what people call a cube. So typically, how long that this coherence is maintained? Well, because so if you put some local perturbation, you will have some matrix elements between these two states. And the lifetime of this coherent superposition will be some function of this, or, you know, of the strength of this matrix, or how big these matrix elements are. But we have just seen that in models like this, these matrix elements will be always zero. Or, in fact, exponentially small. So this is a zero for the pure gauge case, and they are exponentially small when you put a perturbation. In other words, the splitting between two levels, as you know, it also gives you the tunneling gap between two levels. So we're saying that if we use the robustness of the ground space as a way to encode a qubit, this would be there essentially forever, because now the lifetime would be exponentially large in L. without the need of touching the system any longer. So this is one of the very nice properties that these systems have. And then, I don't know if tomorrow or the day after tomorrow, I will also, when we will discuss the excitations, we'll see that the excitations have parastatistics. So they can have statistics that are neither bosonic or fermionic. And this is important for many